Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for Camp Notes for 8/3/25, the Ravens Stadium Practice. The 10th day of camp, comfortable temperatures in the 80s, especially where you're sitting, honestly, in the shade in the back of the lower deck. By the way, looking around the stadium, I did not realize that changes were being made to the first few rows of the upper deck, but it appears like, well, actually three rows of club deck seats have been added, and space has also been added in the upper deck. Looks like also approximately three rows. So, doesn't look like changes have been made to the lower deck. But what used to be the first row, I guess, in the club deck now looks like it's the fourth row. So I'm trying to figure that out, but I imagine there'll be some people who go into their seats and have a little bit of a surprise there when the season begins, if they're in row one before in particular. But getting back to practice anyway, absent Emory Jones, Ardarius Washington, Isaiah Likely, of course, all three of those are out for a fairly long term. Marcus Major, it was undisclosed, but apparently he's dealing with a concussion right now. A couple players returned. Bilal Kone was back from a shoulder injury. He had kind of a rough day. I'll give you that in some detail. Definitely had some flags today, and also a couple of nice plays as well. Tez Walker was back. Looks like he was doing drills, doing some running on the side, but not in 11-on-11 or 7-on-7 stuff. And he may not have been in any 1-on-1 either. I honestly didn't see him in anything but running on the side, being in uniform. And he probably had some 1-on-0 reps. Once you get in uniform, there's really no reason not to do those. But even a 1-on-1 rep can get physical, and that may have been something they didn't want to deal with. I know John said that Tez had a soft tissue injury he was dealing through, so it's probably a minor thing. Oftentimes that means a hamstring, so we'll see if that's what that ended up being. The offense, unlike every practice to date, frankly, the offense had a very solid day today and won a back-and-forth practice with a few more Scooby-Doo bonus points. I'm just calling them that. I heard this. I'll tell you the origin of this thing. There was a group of, 9- and 10-year-old soccer players who were going, and they had an English coach, and the English coach would, assign Scooby-Doo bonus points to kids whenever they would, do something good on the field. The kids would talk about it after practice. So it was a very, motivating kind of thing. Well, the offensive defense have this competition going on that is a scored practice. Most plays have an exchange of 1 point, sometimes 2 points on a play. And, turnovers might be even a little more than that. But you can watch the thing unfold. But the problem is that if they have a specific time-sensitive drill they're doing, a situational drill they're doing, then they take that off the board and they put on other stuff. So that happened even with plenty of room on the scoreboard to put this offense versus defensive scoring in a different place. They put it right on top of where it had been, the offensive defense, which was, in a tight race. It was 38-30. It wasn't that tight, really, entering the last set of 2-minute drills. And the offense seemed to do probably about broke even in those drills overall, which I'll get to a little bit later. But they took that off and they put down the scores now 20-17 with 1:26 to go or whatever it was. And, you know, they take that score away. Anyway, I know that the defense and offense actually pretend to care about that on the field. When plays get made, they get very excited. And used to be in the Suggs era, they would occasionally, you know, talk trash about it to the offense. It's something that's clearly a motivating factor, kind of like the Scooby-Doo bonus points I mentioned otherwise. The practice ended with an interception of Devin Leary, which was one of the few really significant down points for the offense. There were a couple other minor ones where Desmond Igbinosen, who frankly had not done a whole lot in camp so far, went over. A ball was badly misthrown back towards the inside instead of the outside, and Igbinosen made the catch and had space around him as he did so. So nice play by him. He's a guy who, you know, obviously hasn't showed up on the radar so much so far. Practice started off with some punt drills. Same four punt returners we've seen before: Miller, Wade, Wester, and Wallace. Chris Horton was mostly at the line of scrimmage, watching the blocking closely, and that's what you know he is typically will do. Now today, unlike the last day of practice, where almost everything was coming out of a jugs gun, most of the punts were live. So this was Stout mostly kicking. There were a few jugs punts mixed in, and I try and write that down with the other information about the punt, because obviously jugs gun is much easier to track. Stout has a very live leg, a very high leg. But a lot of things are going on. When you have that opportunity to punt at the stadium, you're punting and the stadium wins. One of the coaches, it might've been Horton, talked about he loved being on field three because the wind situation was not protected or enclosed. It's more like what you face at the stadium with some unpredictable winds kind of blowing through. Even though we think of the stadium as enclosed, it definitely has some wind characteristics internal. Just ask Justin Tucker after that 2018 loss to the Saints. You do have some swirling of wind within that stadium. So anyway, punting in that can be a little bit challenging, particularly for the return men to track the football. But I thought the tracking was very good today. Almost everybody got right underneath the punt when they caught it. There were some explosion questions, and there was one fumble. Dayton Wade fumbled a fair catch, and he bobbled another punt catch. Anthony Miller also had a bobble that he secured before it going to the ground, but that would have hurt his return ability there. Lajonte Wester looked very good, I thought. Good judgment to let a ball go for a touchback. Otherwise, he caught the ball, looked explosive coming out of it. He looks, you know, everybody's had a little bit of up and down. Wallace has been by far the most consistent. I'd say Miller has been fairly consistent too, but a touch behind where I would put Wallace. Wallace is getting fewer total opportunities, it appears. He's needed on coverage. It's just a simple structural thing. He needs to be back and worrying about his responsibilities as a gunner as much as he needs to be worried about his responsibilities as a return man. So he's needed in both places. And the other thing that was really nice about the day is that Stout rooted out a 61-yard punt among a number of kicks. And the location of the spot of the football for the punt did not allow for a lot of longer kicks, or we might have seen some of those too. He's got very big leg. The hang time was terrific today. It looked like stadium high punts. And I just say Stout looked very, very positive from that standpoint. Also looked really good as a holder, which has been a nice thing to see. But the 61-yarder is about as much as he could have done. The ball was fielded. I think it was Miller who fielded it at the 1 or 2 yard line. But there wasn't any further that he really could have kicked the ball without it just floating into the end zone. Did a good job there, I thought. The Ravens went back to set and snap drills for the 10th consecutive days. They ran a double field of these today, so they're running at each end of the stadium. You probably noticed this if you were at the practice. They're running two sets of drills where they've apparently got 11 on 11. They run to the line of scrimmage, they snap the football, and they immediately blow the play dead. And if you saw today, I'll just say one more time, what I've been saying on these notes, you know, a fair amount, is they're trying to work with varying cadence so that they can keep the defense on their heels a little bit while also avoiding false starts, getting the line of scrimmage quickly, and getting off their out of their stances quickly. Goal is run with varied cadence, do it well, and you can get out of the blocks a little faster than the defense can. And in particular for the pass rush and the pass blockers, That's very important. So if the Ravens can do it, it'll really be worth it. You'll often hear me talk about a false start penalty is a less serious penalty than an illegal downfield penalty. They're both 5 yards, but an illegal downfield carries the option for the defense to decline. But in a sense, you know, being able to operate with proper cadence is a lot more valuable than that in terms of the ability to keep their defense on their heels and the value that could accrue from that. It kind of applies the value of not having those flags applies to all plays if you're able to do it well and keep the defense, basically on their back foot as they're starting to get going upfield. In any case, they had two false starts and one illegal motion during practice. So I would call that about a tie as results go. They had a bunch of practices with 5 or 6 false starts. Those were losses for the offense in terms of how they're adapting to cadence, but their pre-snap comportment, they are getting a trial by fire on it right now. I think it could pay very significant dividends once the season begins. So that was nice. The MVP of the entire practice, as far as I'm concerned, and definitely the player left the biggest impression walking away, was Tyler Loop. He had an enormous day. He made either 11 out of 11 or 12 out of 12 kicks, but some of those were extra point distance, and some of them were shorter than extra point distance. But here's what I have for him. 38 from the left hash. These are all good, so I'm just going to tell you where they're from. 38 from the left hash, 33 middle, 33 middle, 33 middle. All those would be an extra point spot exactly. And they started the practice by practicing extra points, practicing extra point blocking, and trying to block extra points by the opponents. So they had several kicks from that distance, is why you're seeing so many 33-yard attempts here out of this. You also see him after the Ravens score a situational touchdown, and they then kick an extra point. So anyway, a left hash from 33 middle, 33 middle, 33 middle, 38 from the right hash, 42 from the left hash, 60 from the left hash. So he moved back from 42 to 60, and took a kick. He kicked one from 63 early in camp. Then 33 from the middle, 33 from the middle, 33 from the middle, 56 from the left hash. That was as a kind of a bailout kick in a 2-minute drill. So that was a kind of a cool one. And then 19 from the middle, unfortunately. Cooper Rush led the team all the way down to the 1-yard line, highlighted by a defensive pass interference in the end zone, and then had 3 straight incompletes. And Harbaugh sent on the kicking team to finish it off, and actually would have tied the game, I believe, as they had the situational score working. So not a good result there for the offense, but one that at least Loop made his last kick. Loop also made a 66-yard kick while warming up using a tee holder. And he also missed from 71. And it was about 5 yards short, I would say. It landed. But the good thing about the 71-yard kick and the miss there is it landed in the middle of the end zone, right between, more or less right between the uprights, but certainly between the uprights, just about 5 yards short. So very impressive day from Tyler Loop. He's making like the John Hoyland release really was the right thing in terms of simplifying the kicking battle, I think, and also getting that extra spot freed up that they needed to put extra running back on the roster as it turned out. A few other drills are going on. The inside linebackers worked on the trash can drill. I always love to see that. It's old school football, but they set up 5 trash cans where the offensive line will be. And then they have a live tight end and a live running back who the inside linebackers need to read their keys off of. Okay, so they have to watch kind of how the fullback is moving during the play, how the tight end is set up, and they have to know where do they have to move then in terms of their gap assignment and how aggressive can they be in terms of penetrating or trying to penetrate through that gap. So it's an interesting drill to watch if you ever see it. And you'll see that you wonder, why are they playing against, trash cans here? It's pretty simple. It's just key reading by the inside linebackers on those plays. A few stars of the days. I'll go through these before we get into some individual plays. But a name we haven't heard before, Xavier Guillory, had a great day. He was targeted a number of times. Long passes, where he beat Wiggins, another one where he beat Lowry. He had several others in the two-minute drill, including consecutive passes. I'm going to do it right here, and then I won't let you down. He had a took a DPI from Kone at one point, and he had a consecutive passes, one of 20 yards, where looked like TJ Tampa ran by the play. TJ Tampa had another tough day as well, too. Another 10-yard play on that same drive that helped set up the first and goal from the 1 yard line that in the end did not get converted. But it was a good 2 minute drill, which was full of Xavier Gilroy. So he had a very nice day. I think that's all I have to say about him. Kyle Hamilton, second star. He took down Derrick Henry off the edge on a run play for no gain. Two plays later, he tipped the ball, nearly had an interception. It was an underneath zone coverage on the right side. What I'll say about Hamilton is he's one of the defensive backs who actually stayed out of trouble in this practice. He didn't get beat deep by anybody, and he didn't get flagged. And a lot of the defenders got flagged in this thing. It may have been an over officious set of jerks kind of thing, as in the Marv Levy term. But I thought that the defense had a lot of trouble staying with some of the receivers today. And you know what? The offense needed a win. The offense has not played well against the defense. They've not been at the same point. And today they looked a little bit ahead. One defender who had a very tough day was Bilal Kone. The nice thing is he returned to practice, and he's there, and he's playing full 11 on 11s. He had that shoulder problem, apparently was dealing with some pain management issues as per John Harbaugh, but had a very tough day of flags. A couple nice plays permeating that. He was flagged for DPI in a one-on-one drill, which is not really that big a deal, but then he was flagged for DPI on Guillory, 10 yards by the right sideline. He had good boundary coverage on a ball intended for Guillory that was 35 yards down the right sideline. Now, that ball was thrown out of bounds. It wasn't one that Guillory could have gotten to the ball easily, but the fact that Kone was in position there is probably part of the reason he wasn't there. And then he had step-for-step coverage of Banks, 25 yards down the left sideline, and that ball also thrown out of bounds. So it looked like Banks made a really nice play on the ball out of bounds, but he was 4 yards out of bounds or something. He was substantially out. So good to see Kone back on the field. Good to see him make a couple plays. Not the greatest day in terms of getting flagged, but he was not alone in the secondary. JAD had a big flag, and TJ Tampa had a big flag. And there's probably some others as we go through this. Might have been Lowry had a flag as well. So we'll go through this, and we'll talk about this in the individual plays, which are next. So going back to the beginning here, I'm going to take a drink if you don't mind. Or as it turns out, if you do mind. So it started off a nice screen pass from Jackson to Andrews. Looked like it was about 5 plus 10. What was nice about it, more than just a pass to Andrews, was that Ronnie Stanley was out in space, made a great block on Trenton Simpson that I thought was really highlight worthy. Then we had Justice Hill with a breakaway run middle for a touchdown. Hill had a couple where he got into space today, which is nice to see. Not every play, of course, but he looked good on a couple today. We had Lamar Jackson run right into open space. Lamar's taken off running a fair amount in practice, and he seems to be enjoying it. And it doesn't matter how far he runs, he's ready for the next play a lot of the times. And this one was marked just short of a touchdown. But they still moved on, I believe. They might have run the ball for a touchdown after that, but I didn't record what the next play was. We saw some of Cooper Rush on the field then. We saw Brent Urban make a play, wrapping up Rasheen Ali for no gain. Then we had a swing pass from Rush to Keaton Mitchell, who is the first option, it seems, on every Rush play, because Cooper, first of all, Keaton Mitchell is by far the most talented offensive player remaining on the field when the ones are not in. And he might be when the ones are in. But with the twos in, there's not any question at all about it. And he's just been unbelievable in camp. I've said this a couple times, he literally could be in the players of the day every day from how many individual plays that he made. But this one was about a 5 plus 15 touchdown between the right hash and the right numbers. All right, then let's see. There was a throw in the end zone where Cooper Rush was trying to hit Dayton Wade, and there was JAD to be flagged for pass interference, and that set up a ball at the 1 yard line. Of course, we did have a throw from Leary to the new running back, D'Ernest Johnson, who was there today. It was about 10 yards, five circle. Five circle means by the right sideline. Martin, and this is Chandler Martin, was in coverage. Looked like there was significant contact, almost like they ran into each other, but there was no flag on the play, and so good coverage for Martin on that. They went to some 9-on-9 run drills while they were doing one-on-ones. I kind of focus on the one-on-ones in that case because in the run drills, they're more about reading keys and trying to know where each group is going, but they tend to be less breakaway plays, and you're giving away that it's going to be a run when you go 9-on-9. They're only occasionally will throw in a pass to throw off the defense, but generally speaking, they're not trying to pass the ball. But in the one-on-ones, we saw a few things. We saw a nice defense by Reuben Lowry, the safety on Miller, about 25 yards by the right sideline. We saw 23, remind me, Jair Alexander in coverage of Dayton Wade, 15 yards by the right sideline. Didn't even end up being a throw that was made. The ball got held onto, the play got blown dead, but there was no throw, and it was because of good coverage by Alexander on Wade. Then Reuben Lowry, after a great play, got beaten deep by Guillory, and that was 30 yards down the right sideline. And that, we already mentioned that highlight earlier, but Reuben Lowry, who's looked darn good in camp so far, had an up and down day in terms of that. Another play by Jair Alexander where he got a pressure. He pressed Anthony Miller to the sideline for an incomplete pass, 25 yards, five circle. So that's by the right sideline again. Just good boundary corner play where he squeezed that space on the sideline to force the overthrow in that case. Then we had Guillory blowing by Wiggins for the touchdown I mentioned earlier. That was about 40 yards down the right sideline. We had a throw from Jackson to Bateman, which mysteriously flew right through Bateman's hands.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
He's looked pretty good, but he's also missed a number of days of camp so far. Missed a handful of days of camp so far. There's only been 10. So, you know, that it's unfortunate to miss an opportunity like that. He didn't get a lot of targets today other than that one. But it was in zone coverage. It looked like he was in a good position to make the play, and it just went through his hands. We had Derrick Henry stopped by a combination of Jones and Matabike. That was positive. We had a pressure from Wiggins. One thing I'll say that I've seen in camp, without getting into specifics about exactly what they're trying to accomplish here, is that Zach Orr does not seem to be afraid to rush his cornerbacks at all, bring them on the blitz. And it's not necessarily even just the slot corner. I think he's we've seen some outside blitzes as well. So I'd be really interested to see what he does during the season with that. We've seen Rex Ryan, if you go back to 2006, had about 10 he used in an entire year. That might be about as high as I would place the over-under for Orr, who was generally very conservative. I think, you know, Rex Ryan's bent is let's try and be as aggressive as possible. And if we absolutely need to, we'll dial it back from that. But my normal bias is going to be as aggressive as possible. I think Orr's normal bias is to let's see if we can get pressure with four. And I can go with different ways to get four home. And I go with a little more scheme. But if scheme is not needed, then I'd rather just get home with the base four. It's a winning strategy if you have a team like the Eagles, if you have a team like the Cowboys of the 1970s, the Rams of the 1960s and 70s. That it's very much a winning strategy. If you can win with four, there's almost nothing you can do defensively that is more effective than that in terms of getting you the quarterback, but helping your defense overall by getting you the quarterback, I should say. So it's willingness to go after the quarterback with corners is kind of interesting in this. All right, we're moving on here. We had a run from Hill for 10 to 12 yards off the left edge. Another one where he found space again. Then we had a couple of nice plays of Hamilton. I mentioned the tackle for loss in the backfield, and then another near INT where he tipped the ball. Got a nice play from Roquan Smith, who stopped Henry for looks like a 1 yard gain here. We had another pressure from Roquan Smith just a couple of plays after that, where he forced Jackson to roll right, complete a short pass to Hill, but that was on third and medium, and they did not get the first down. At that point, by the way, practice was really close. The defense is leading 13 to 12. They would extend their lead to at least 19 to 15 before the offense made their move, came back and won it by a fair margin. What else we got here? We had an overthrow from Rush for Guillory. That was about 25 yards down the right sideline. We had Ali stopped by JAD on a run right. Kind of nice play by JAD there. He wasn't perfect today, but that one was good. Beautiful cut by Keaton Mitchell. Run up the middle, and then immediately just a video game juke left to break away and get to space. You're going to have to see him for yourself on Thursday night before. If you haven't been to camp and you haven't really seen it directly, most times I don't even try and judge whether a running back is really doing some good things to find space, to follow blocks. There's very little you can tell, I think, from camp play. Running backs are notorious for running out the play in camp and often trying to run for a touchdown every time they touch the ball. It doesn't necessarily tell you anything about whether or not contact was made. You got to really watch the whistle, where they're spotting the ball afterwards and whatnot, whether or not they think it was truly a breakaway run. But I can tell you, just watching Mitchell in camp, he's one of the rare running backs that you can tell right away. He's just faster than everybody else. He's shiftier. He's jukier. He's got real skills in terms of transitioning from catch to run after the catch that have been very apparent. So I'm extremely excited about where Keaton Mitchell is this year. I think he could be a huge role in the offense, and he looks a lot more like 2023 Keaton Mitchell than I dared hope. All right, continue on. A nice play, a sack by Mike Green, who got in against Cooper Rush. And we had another play where, unfortunately, this was a bad Keaton Mitchell play. He was stopped after a short gain. And it looked like the ball had been blown dead, but then the ball all of a sudden was on the ground and Chandler Martin picked it up. So good play by Martin. Obviously, you want to hang on to the football all the way through contact to make the Ravens coaches as happy as possible. This might or might not have been an actual fumble. It probably was not, if I were to guess, but still not Mitchell's highlight from camp so far. A guy we haven't mentioned a lot is Jason Jones. He backed up the center, Reed Holsky, for a pressure, which was nice to see. I have not heard too much from him. Then we get to another DPI by Kone here, and then we move on. And we talked about that one already. Okay, we had Leary throwing to Cunningham. Nice run after the catch by Cunningham where he made a really nice juke. I did not see who he did it to. I was too impressed by the juke itself. But that got them in position to do a field goal in that situational drill. We had Lamar Jackson escaping the pocket on a run right for 15 yards. And then he threw a pass to Keith Kirkwood for a 15-yard gain on the left sideline. Kirkwood was open in space on that play, so I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but there might have been a misassignment or it may just have been a zone play where I didn't quite pick up what the defense was trying to do. Then we had a Cooper Rush on the field, completed a ball again to Cunningham. I'm sorry, he threw a ball for Cunningham that was knocked down by Keon Martin. I guess Keon Martin with the pass defense. He's another guy who did not get flagged today, so good day for him in that sense. Banks made a high leaping catch, which I probably wouldn't even mention. Kone was in coverage. I don't blame him at all. But Banks did make a high leaping grab. Looks like Banks has pretty good hands from that one and the sideline, but there was no opportunity to defend it. It wasn't a particularly long gain. It's just a catch outside of the frame that I thought was worth mentioning. Made 7-on-7 drills and Wiggins was flagged for illegal contact. We also had a nice toe tap reception in the back of the end zone for a touchdown from LaJonte Wester. I was also watching a number of one-on-one pass rush reps. I thought that Daniel Falele held up once well versus Matabike. Did so again against Peebles, and then he didn't look so good on a third one where I don't seem to have it marked here properly, but he didn't look so good on a third one. One of the problems with the one-on-one drills is they run them very quickly, almost too quickly for me to record what's going on fast enough. So if I, you know, oftentimes I'm looking up again and the subsequent rep is almost over. The guy who looked greatest in the one-on-one drills by far was Travis Jones. He backed up Keith Bullock twice. Looked very good doing it. Adisa Isaac did a nice job versus Nuke Boom. Who else was good? Oh, one guy who looked good on the offensive line was Dellinger, who twice stopped CJ Okoye. That's an enormous nose tackle, just good to see. We also saw Jason Jones make another play in that pass rush drill to Bull Reed Holsky, who seemed to have some trouble. And then Reed Holsky finally had a decent job holding off Jason Jones again. So, a back and forth. We did see one good play from Carson Vinson. Definitely want to mention that because Carson doesn't really seem to have a lot of super important reps. And we'll see more of him in the preseason. But he did a good job stopping Malik Ham on a play. Back to a little more 11-on-11. We're not quite to the final segment yet. We had Henry caught a wheel route. I guess it was a wheel route. It was a catch over Simpson. It was 15 yards down the right sideline. They marked him just short of the end zone. That came from Lamar, but a good pass there. Then they tried a slant route in the end zone to Wallace. Humphrey did a really good job of defending that one, but that only held up the TD for a moment when Henry ran it in right up the middle, more or less. Okay, other stuff in the next drill. So we now have Rush on the field. There was a PD in the end zone by JAD. Nice play by him. Had a couple of running plays. And then Rush ran the ball 10 yards for a touchdown after he was flushed. And they made the extra point on that as well. So that was a solid drive there. Then Leary was in with the third stringers. Heyman Rucker, who also wears number 56, like Reed Holsky, he's on the defensive side wears number 56. He had a pass defense at the line of scrimmage on a ball that looked to be intended for the new tight end Cup, the former Chiefs player who wears number 17. They ended up having to settle for a field goal there. The offense at that point led 38-30 going into the final two-minute drill. The final two-minute drill had its excitement here. Lamar Jackson, had some trouble on the first play because I think this is the play I was thinking of earlier, where Daniel Faalele was bowled for pressure. And then he threw a short pass to Andrews, and then Loop bailed them out with a 56-yard field goal from the left hash that would have tied the game under the situation given. So I think that the offense probably broke even probably on that play in the, you know, up eight to start that. And Cooper Rush had an interesting drive. And honestly, I would say the Ravens are probably a little bit disappointed about what they've seen from Cooper Rush so far. You don't expect too much because he's a backup quarterback, but he also was, they paid a little more money this time around than they had before. And I think they expected to get a little more in terms of a quarterback and what he could deliver. He had hit Charlie Kolar on a couple of short passes, another couple of short passes to Guillory to get down the field. Then a DPI in the end zone by TJ Tampa versus Anthony Miller set the Ravens up, we'll call it the twos up, with first and goal at the 1 yard line. He then proceeded to throw three consecutive incomplete passes. Two of them were basically throwaways. The third one, Kolar was covered by Bo Breed in the end zone. So if anything, it's probably a nice play by Breed on there. I think maybe more to make a point than anything else in a three-point game, Harbaugh brought on the field goal team to kick at that point, and Loop put it through the uprights in what a kick that would have tied the game. And I would have really questioned the judgment if they decided on fourth and one to kick instead of go for it in that situation. So then Leary came on the field. I won't go through all the plays. He did have a nice 10-yard. Now, a throw to Wester that he was unable to handle or haul in, I'll say, 10 yards down the right sideline. And then Kone had a step-for-step coverage play on Banks. But he, with some short passes, he made it down to about the 25-yard line before throwing an interception. It was intended for Wester, overthrown and hauled in by Desmond Igbinosin, who had his first really big play of camp. So nice, fairly balanced day overall, but one where the offense clearly got a win, and it was a win they really needed after how they've played so far in camp and really been dominated by the defense. I did not attend the podium session today. If you want to go out and look at that on the Ravens website, it's all available, and I'm sure there's some interesting stuff said, but Maureen and I attended practice in the stadium, and I wanted to spend that time with her. And then we got home as quickly as we could to try and record this episode. But I do have a few questions that have come in. We'll start off with some questions from Gooba Da Man, and I will read them off here. The first one is does Daniel Faalele have the right guard job won? And what has he done to earn it? So I paraphrased the question there, Goob. I hope that's okay. But let me start with this. That Daniel Faalele started all 17 games last year. He started throughout OTAs, and he's been playing with the ones the whole time. I don't think it should be a surprise to anybody that Daniel Faalele is still the starting right guard for the Baltimore Ravens. And I don't think there's any chance he gets dislodged from that spot by opening day. But I'll say two things. One is I really haven't seen enough in camp to make a judgment one way or the other if he's playing quite at the level that he did at the end of last year. But the end of last year, he's playing very well. And he has earned the right to fail at this point. And his last and most recent and most pertinent information, it is awfully good results. It's an awfully positive data point. Beyond that, he worked very hard this offseason. So I think that the likelihood is that it would probably take half a season or more for somebody other than Daniel Faalele to be the right guard for the Ravens. Ben Cleveland, I suppose, would be it. But were he to do anything but completely fall apart, I don't think that's likely. And here's the problem. People have been trained in a certain way by the PFF grades and by things certain people are saying online about offensive line play to believe that run blocking is as important as pass blocking. It's just not. The pass blocking is far more important. And the other thing that's far more important that Faalele got under control at the end of last season is the penalties. And other linemen for the Ravens weren't perfect in that regard, but most of the team got it together towards the end of the year. Most notably, Tyler Linderbaum was still having problems at the end of the year. So, Daniel Faalele is a flawed player. He's a player who has things he cannot do on a football field, and he's got some things that he could still work on and do better of the things that he possibly could do on a field. He needs to be more decisive. He needs to do some things, but it's not time to give up on Daniel Faalele. That's what I'd say, Guba. I think he is a better chance to be an effective right guard than Voorhees is to be an effective left guard. And Harbaugh looks at the Voorhees Cleveland matchup as, Voorhees is already basically far in the lead. That's fine. And I'm not saying it's unwarranted, but if I were to bet on which of those two would be the more effective guard this year, it would be Faalele easily in a runaway. So anyway, we are where we are right now. That's my opinion on the matter. I know other people think differently about it, and that's how life works sometimes. Your second question, Guba, really appreciate these, by the way, is Wiggins getting beat as much as it looks on the highlights? Again, I'm just trying to paraphrase your question down, trim it down a little bit. Wiggins has been beat some. He got beat today once in a one-on-one drill. He's got beaten on other plays that have not looked good. He's also made some fantastic plays. Seems to be very streaky in terms of making a lot of plays at once. He is unbelievably talented in terms of how he reads things and obviously what his recovery speed can do for him. It's a matter of the game kind of becoming the right speed for him so he can make judgments on the fly and do more than just know what his assignment is. And a lot of this, this isn't me saying this. This is basically the comments of Wiggins himself and also from Pagano at the podium on Saturday. The game seems to be slowing down for him a little bit. And this is a great place for Wiggins to be. Between year one and year two, when you have a player who is as good a coverage player as Nate Wiggins was last year, and frankly, as Nate Wiggins was in college, because it's still pertinent, particularly since he effectively did what I would expect him to do at the pro level based on his college stats as a rookie. I would expect big things from Nate Wiggins this year. I think he's going to be a player the Ravens don't take off the field at any point. All right, one more question. It's from Task Force 141. Are the Ravens going to a 4-3 this season? The Ravens, the question that is a little different. The Ravens play a base defense that is a 3-4, but they rarely, rarely, rarely play base defense. So they often have four down linemen at the line of scrimmage, but that usually means they're in nickel, which they play a high percentage of the time. And I don't have that in front of me right now. If I did, I'd just bring it up and I'd tell you. But a large percentage of the Ravens' total snaps are in nickel. And even if they're in dime, they're still going to have four down players at the line of scrimmage, which is probably what I'm guessing you mean. I think it'll always be a four-man pass rush or four-man front on obvious passing downs. So from that standpoint, I agree. But if you're asking, is this a way to get like Buchanan and Simpson on the field at the same time by playing 4-3? No, I don't think that'll happen. I think that the Ravens will play, a 4-2-5 nickel, a 4-1-6 dime, perhaps under some circumstances. But I don't think we'll see a true 4-3 where they have three off-ball linebackers. If they were to do that sort of a thing, it would probably be more likely something where it would be a gimmicky pass rush situation where they would have maybe Mike Green or Kyle Van Noy off the line of scrimmage because they didn't want to have all three of their big pass rushers on the line of scrimmage with one kicked inside. So something like that is conceivable, but I would just bet on that not occurring very often. But appreciate the question, Task Force 141, a good one, and really appreciate your questions too, Guba. I'll try and get to more of these on future shows. If you'd like to submit them, use hashtag Film Study Mailbag. And if you use hashtag Film Study Mailbag and then put the show you want it assigned on, whether it's Camp Notes or Friday Morning GM or something like that, that's cool too. I'd always can appreciate that. Anyway, that's going to do it for today. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.